The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's good Monday. Thanks for being with us. We have a new teammate we're going to introduce here in a moment. Claudia Faust, I'm so excited that she has come on board. She's going to be with us. Actually, I have a bunch of former teammates today in some capacity. Kalen Jones with The Ringer just happens to be jumping on today because Kalen bugs me about NFL stuff. And actually, in all seriousness, Kalen is doing a terrific job. It's fun when you have Peter King, and then it's fun when you have Kalen Jones and everybody in between. It's not like I'm disappointed if it's Brock Huard that's with us or any of those big names, but Kalen is just zooming upward when it comes to NFL contact and in his work with Bill Simmons, he's doing terrific. Doug Howler with The Athletic today because ASU opened spring football on Wednesday. I'm super excited about this whole week. We have some great guests lined up this week. We are the busiest sports market in America. There is no question about it. A week from now, NASCAR is in town. Spring football starts this week. The Suns are actually relevant and interesting. They're not getting their heads kicked in. So I'm fired up, psyched up, geeked up, as I like to say. We're brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate their support, Jeff Mishi and company. So I watched Suns last night. Man, Minnesota is bad. There's some bad teams in the NBA. Like teams that you look at and you just say, whew. And the Suns were dinking around. And then Devin said, enough of this. And he went out and he scored 43. And now they have the Lakers tomorrow night. Like those of us that have been here longer than a nanosecond know that Suns v. Lakers, the world stops. Unless it's the Suns, which in the last, since 2015, to give you an idea of how incompetent things have been down on Jefferson Street, the Suns' win total for February of 2021 came within one victory of the combined wins from 2015 to 2020. Combined! Like, they always get crushed and destroyed. And, like, what are we doing here? So, you know, they're fun, they're relevant, and they're playing well. So that's a lead story today. There's some other things I want to get to, but first, Claudia Faust. So here's my deal on Claudia as she comes on board. It's good to see you. A little backstory on Claudia, and that is I'm at ASU Intern Day with a professor. The professor, of course, is Paula Bovin. Paula, for years when she was with the Republic and all the way back to San Diego, was a weekly guest with me. And whenever Paula says something to me about that person over there is really good, because Paula never says that person's not good, that's not the professor. But here's Claudia, and she didn't sign up for Sports 360 for an internship. So I'm like, okay, that's already one big strike against her because she didn't want to work for us. But from there, I called her over and said, so what is your story? Because Paula here is bragging about you. And now you're part of our team. Welcome on board.
I'm so excited how life just kind of works out that way. It was definitely a bond made to happen. And I always have to shout out Paula for kind of being my, bragging about me and all of that, which is crazy for someone like Paula to even think of me. You and I have talked about it before. She's so humble, but she is so awesome. So to have someone like that in your corner is unbelievable. And she was obviously great to learn from at Cronkite. And, Cronkite in general, that's obviously where I got my master's degree, where I was at intern day. But it is just crazy how life works out. And you and I stayed in touch because I did like what you guys were doing and I wanted to be a part of it. So I just, went to Texas for a little bit and then said, hey, I like the desert. I like hiking. I like the sports. I'm going back to Arizona.
That's cool. Claudia Faust is with us. So your background in sports started when and where? Were you a player? Were you just a fan of media? Where did your interest in sports come from?
Man, that is interesting. So I'm the firstborn American in my family. And in my family, football is not on the gridiron. It is on the soccer field. And so I grew up watching football. My mom is from Venezuela, from South America. My dad's from Germany, which obviously having a dad from Germany, if you know anything about international soccer, the Germany football team is amazing. I really only watch soccer every 4 years for the World Cup, to be honest. So I'm not a diehard soccer fan, but that's the only sport that was ever on in my house. My dad I'm going to make him sound bad, but he knows nothing about American football. So I really didn't
your dad.
Have, love my dad, but I definitely didn't really learn much about sports from him. However, my mom was a big tennis player, and so I got into tennis at a young age. Probably could have played D2 college tennis, but growing up in a family that was not from the United States, the idea of playing a college sport was like not even in the realm of possibility. They didn't know how to help me explore that option. I didn't even think about it as an option because it was never talked about. So fast forward, I went to Florida Atlantic University. And this is such a strange way to get into sports, but the truth is I met my fiance my freshman year of college and really didn't care too much that he played baseball, but he played baseball at Florida Atlantic and eventually got drafted and played minor league baseball. And that's when I decided I should probably know a little something about what he's doing. So I got a scorebook, learned how to keep score. Him and I would go to bars after games and he would teach me everything from pitching to base running, everything. And so that was kind of the first sport I got into. And then I was like, hey, I'm at a minor league ballpark. I started talking to the PA announcer. He let me sit up in the press box, which was really nice in Lexington, Kentucky, because it was humid in the summer. So I was lucky to be in the press box with air conditioning. Maybe wouldn't have fallen in love with sports so much if I was stuck out in the heat. But everything kind of just developed from there. I fell in love with media. The only thing I was really like great at growing up was talking. So I was like, here we go. I can talk for a living if I do this. So I started working with the athletics department at my school, and that just turned into internships, jobs, and learning more about other sports. And I have to admit, I'm still learning, but I think that's kind of makes things interesting for me because I kind of have a new fan's perspective and can bring in people who didn't always love sports like me. I know how to get their attention. So I think that's something a little bit different about me because I didn't grow up head over heels in love with sports.
That's good. That's good. Claudia Faust is our newest teammate at Sports 360 AZ. You also went to Texas out of Cronkite after your master's. You know, full disclosure, Claudia was a grader for me for a class. And when she left, it was like, okay, please stay in touch because I could tell, okay, this is rock star potential here. You know, just sky's the limit. But you went to Texas and you did everything on the high school football front. We had lunch the other day and I took her to Joe's Farm Grill, by the way. She's a DDD person. And we were talking about your love of high school football and what you saw in Texas. I think you can do really well with that out here.
Oh, yeah, I think so for sure. And, you know, I only say that Texas is as great as it is because it was kind of my first introduction into high school sports. At Cronkite, my beats were, you know, professional baseball, kind of athletic. I didn't really get to explore the high school football or high school sports scene here in Arizona, whereas in Texas, you just live and breathe high school sports in the Texas Panhandle where I was because we were 5 hours away from the closest major city. Like Amarillo, Texas was the biggest thing in its area. We did have minor league baseball. Well, we didn't because it was 2020. And so I never actually got to cover minor league baseball because like most things that was canceled. But I really, you know, fell in love with it. There's so many great stories to be told at the high school level. And one of the great things about that is they just kind of appreciate it so much because they haven't made it yet. So you have the opportunity to kind of help them make it. And they just love when you get to tell their story and their parents are tuning in, the whole town's tuning in wherever they might be from in that area. So I'm definitely hoping to bring what I learned there back here, which, as you said, I think will be a piece of cake.
Yeah, but I think for you too, you have reach. You're going to do, her first show is going to be on Fitz and Marcus Allen and Richard Dent and, you know, figuring out when it's time to walk away from the NFL. You know, whenever I have a teammate come on board, are they willing to get after it and not just get comfortable doing one thing? And I think you're going to be great riding on whatever it is you want to go chase. You're big into hiking. Claudia's got an idea on a platform on hiking trails and being outdoors. Like that's super cool. Something that would be cool up on the website. the high school stuff will take care of itself. You know, ASU open spring ball this week, you know that drill. You can go out to that. If the Suns go to the playoffs, I'd have no problem putting you on a plane and saying go. So, you know, just roll with it. Be brilliant, as I like to say, and good luck. Okay, I'm glad you're on board.
I'm so excited to be a part of it. Definitely can't thank you enough. And everyone already seems so kind. Obviously, it's been mostly virtually, but hey, I'm just happy to be here and a part of it.
Yeah, just look out for the Iron Man. Okay. Iron Man. Jared Nielsen, the Iron Man, the face and the voice no one has ever heard, man. No, I'm just kidding. He keeps you going on the air. Good stuff. We'll see you soon, okay? Stay well.
Sounds good.
There's Claudia Faust with us, newest member of Sports 360 AZ, welcoming our new teammate. All right, so the Tiger stuff over the weekend. Did you guys see what the PGA was like with guys wearing red? You know, there's been this idea that that Tiger is not beloved, but when you hear Rory McIlroy discussing that, you know, without Tiger, where are we? I thought that was so cool. And the whole visuals of Tiger, of players wearing the red to support Tiger yesterday was just something neat about sports. Yeah, neat. Cute little word, right? Saturday, I went to Tucson, as mentioned, and Phil Mickelson was playing on the Champions Tour. The event at Tucson, it was the Tucson Omni, and I went down there because Larry Fitzgerald was playing in a Pro-Am deal for Golf Channel for Colligard Classic. And I wanted to get some time with Fitz just to see where he's at. We will have that on the TV show tomorrow night. I'll probably put it on the stream show tomorrow. But Phil was playing. And so I'm waiting for Fitz. It was like 11, I don't know, it was like 11:30. And they said, yeah, Phil's teeing off at 1. So I walked down, guys. I walked down the stairs at the Omni. And there might have been, because they were only allowing in a few hundred fans, there might have been 20 people on the tee box for Phil. And I'm just standing there like, wow. So he tees off and I walk with him. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to walk with Phil. Not with him, like next to him, but along the ropes. I'm not talking to him or anything. He gets down, his tee shot rolls up against the cart path. There's maybe two people standing there watching Phil trying to figure this out and talk to his caddy. He hits a putt to say par on one. We walk a few holes. It was amazing. Just to be out, and we had to be masked up, but no one was on the golf course. So then Fitz shows up. Actually, Richard Dent shows up first. Richard Dent is one of the great, great, he's a Hall of Fame defensive lineman with the Bears, and he shows up a little early to this media event, and we're just sitting there shooting the breeze, and up walks Marcus Allen, and we're shooting the breeze, and it's Chris Peterson, a photographer at Channel 12, and myself. And that's it from Phoenix. Nobody else is there. And Fitz rolls up, and we start talking in depth about some stuff. And then he gets up on stage, and yeah, you do your job and ask, okay, where are you at on this retirement thing? And do you know what you're going to do? And he's playing coy and all that stuff, as he is usually done. But it just felt a little different. It just felt a little different with him. I'm not saying I know what he's going to do, but I have to believe that he is doing some mental gymnastics, or maybe it's the Cardinals and the mental gymnastics or the financial gymnastics of it. You know, he didn't have a great year statistically. Okay. The team missed the playoffs. Every year you have to get yourself mentally ready to go. And on their side of the street, you have to get yourself financially ready to go. And so I have no insight on anything other than he could announce today he's walking away, but it just felt different this time. And then I decided, well, heck, I'm down here. I wanted to get a few shots of him teeing off. He teed off, and I decided to walk the back nine with him. He teed off on 10. It was kind of fun to, there's nobody out there, like nobody out there. And to hear the interaction between himself, Marcus Allen, Pudge Rodriguez was part of their group, and I'm taking it all in, and Larry is pushing himself, and he starts talking to himself. He had a shot. He topped the ball. I want to say it was like on 14. So all we've ever seen of Larry Fitzgerald is greatness. Okay. Golf's pretty humbling, and he tops the ball, and you could tell he was not happy with himself. he gets up to hit the next shot and he hits it short. And as he hits it, he just says out loud, "Larry, what are you doing?" So I'm not down on the football field. I'm never down there. I've not been on the field across from him when he's made plays, not made plays. We all see it. We don't hear the parts where players, where greatness gets on themselves. We don't. So to see him being humbled by golf and talking to himself and out loud getting mad at himself, it was different. It was different. There was one stretch where he ran up to his ball. They're trying to catch up. It was being shown live on Golf Channel. And so there was a spot where he hit his tee shot, started walking out, and they said, "Yeah, we got to pick up the pace." So Larry starts sprinting. He's in his golf gear. He looks great as usual, but he's sprinting in his golf gear. And I just kind of looked around and said, "He's moving pretty good." The last thing you want to see is him like pull his hamstring or something, right? So it was a good day Saturday to see him. And the comments from Marcus Allen and Richard Dent, Claudia is going to put it in the TV show, and I'll probably put it here on the stream tomorrow, were really strong. As promised, right off the top, Peter King, Football Morning in America, none bigger to talk about the National Football League inside and out than Peter. The news of J.J. Watt, from Peter King's point of view, the moment you heard it, you felt what?
Surprised. Not that I think he's a bad fit in the Valley, but my feeling is that there were other teams that are closer than the Cardinals.
Mm.
Not that the Cardinals are far away, but I thought that if he wanted to have a chance, the best chance to win a Super Bowl this year, he would go and probably take less money at a place like Green Bay or Buffalo. And, you know, there were several that everybody had mentioned. And look, this is very early in the process. I don't know. He hasn't said anything yet. So what do I know about what really happened here? He's done a very good job of keeping everything since his release very quiet. But I have to feel that this was a balance between going a good team and not taking a huge bath on his contract.
Mm. You know, Peter, when you look at it from a distance, the moment that it popped up on his social media of him in a Cardinal jersey, and within moments, the Cardinals have a press release out of a 2-year deal, a 2-year commitment. I've had mixed reaction from fans saying, you know, we've seen contracts come to Arizona before with players that are towards the end, and they always go back to Emmett Smith and what happened. I think it's a completely different situation and time here. How much gas is left in the tank with J.J. Watt, I think, is the question that a lot of fans are asking.
Well, I think it's a very logical question. It's a good question. But here's the thing with J.J. Watt. You know, to come down on the side of J.J. Watt's got 2 good years left, you would say J.J. Watt has played 40 of the last 48 games, has been relatively productive over that period of time. He's had 25 sacks. He's very good rushing from inside as well. And I won't be remotely surprised if he has 2 productive years left.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take it out a little bit further, you say that, you know, in the last 5 years, J.J. Watt has played 2 full seasons. And in the other 3 seasons, he's played 3, 5, and 8 games. So J.J. Watt has missed a lot of games due to injury. And again, I'd like to see the contract, and good for the Cardinals. In order to get him, I'm sure they had to really pony up because there are other teams that are closer. But, you know, the Cardinals, I'm sure, will say that, look, we found ourselves wanting another front seven force. We didn't have one. You know, we have Chandler Jones, and we don't really have a great rush guy other than Chandler Jones.
Right.
So it makes all the sense for the Cardinals. And, you know, Brad, I just – it's easy to sit here and say, oh, bad deal. The guy, this is age 32 year, you know, three of his last 5 years, he's missed a lot of time. But, you know, again, that's why all of these contracts to me, when you sign a guy who's going to be 32 years old and he's entering his 11th year, all of these contracts are dangerous. So, you know, I think in order to get him, they probably had to go a little bit farther than they really wanted to go, because that's a lot of money. I saw Adam Schefter reported it. There's $23 million guaranteed. Man, that's a lot of money guaranteed to a guy who's missed a lot of games.
Well, and you look at it, Peter, and you have the free agency situation with Patrick Peterson on the backside of his career. If you look at offensively with the concern of, does Kyler have enough help on the offensive front? Kenyon Drake is a free agent. Larry Fitzgerald's a free agent. If we talk specifically about Fitz, do you think this has anything for Fitz to say, you know what, I should come back for another year because they are making a run at least, and I don't want to be here in another situation where we're looking up from the basement of the NFC West.
I really thought toward the end of the year that Larry was going to retire. And, you know, it's, you always keep saying, well, you know, maybe he's got 1 year left. Larry Fitzgerald's 38 years old next season. I mean, and, you know, he's coming off a really kind of unimpactful year. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Beyond subpar, you know, I mean, 7.6 yards per reception. I mean, that's awful. And so I'm not blaming him altogether. I'm just saying that he right now appears to be a bit part of this offense. Mm-hmm. And so part of me says, I'm sure that Larry will say, oh my gosh, I've played all this time. I want to come back one more year and do whatever I can and all that. But I mean, the Cardinals just have to look at their contract situation now. And I don't have their cap in front of me, Brad, but you know, everybody is going to be pinching pennies this year, everybody. And to take whatever it is, and I would assume, I just assume that if they did a contract with Larry Fitzgerald, it would be pushing money off into 2023 and or 24.
There's no way he's making $11 million again, Peter. Those days are gone of 1 year, 11 millions for Larry. Got to be.
Yeah.
With this contract with J.J. Watt, got to be.
Yeah, I would think so. But there are ways that you could say to Larry Fitzgerald, I mean, I am mindful of the contract that Peyton Manning signed his last year in the NFL. John Elway came to him and said he was due $20 million. And he came to him and said, you got to take a $4 million haircut. We need to sign an offensive lineman. We don't have any money. And so Peyton, I think, angrily took the pay cut with $4 million to be made up in bonuses. And he actually ended up making it back because that year they won the Super Bowl. So he made his money. But that is the kind of contract that I would think that the Cardinals would have to give Larry Fitzgerald because, and again, I don't have their cap in front of me. They might be in better shape than I think they are. But in order to do this, I would guess that the Cardinals are not going to be able to do much of anything in free agency. And clearly they have to be counting on, you know, a bookend situation with J.J. Watt, Chandler Jones, to be able to chase the quarterbacks of the NFC West.
Before I get you out of here, and I appreciate your time on short notice, Peter King, Football Morning in America, the big story, the Cardinals getting J.J. Watt. What happened in Houston from your view? Is it just simply what happened with DeAndre Hopkins, Deshaun Watson went out? How did it fall apart for J.J. Watt in Houston?
I think he got tired of the organization being basically amateur hour. Mm. And you know, Brad, you know what you should do? Go back and look at the Twitter video that J.J. Watt put up. It's like 90 or 100 seconds. Just thanking the fans in in Houston for everything that they did for him and meant to him and all that. He didn't thank the organization. All he said was, we have agreed to part ways. He didn't go into any, oh man, thank you to the McNair family for bringing me here. The McNairs are so wonderful. They've been great to me, everything. He thanked the city of Houston, you know, and you really had to be listening to it. It was a very nice farewell to Houston, but it's what he didn't say in that it just, you know, he felt like if you can get out of that sinking ship, you really need to try to get out. And that's what J.J. Watt did.
I'll let you go off that, Peter. I appreciate your time and your insight, as always, on J.J. Watt coming to the Cardinals today. Thanks.
All right, Brad, take care.
There's Peter King, and we're back with more after this timeout. All right, the busiest sports market in America, as I like to say, now has spring football coming up this week at Arizona State. You would think that Suns Lakers would be dominating, and it is to a point, but Doug Haller with The Athletic is with us because we have daytime college basketball games. We have March Madness around the corner. Spring training is underway. We have a NASCAR race next. I could go on and on and on. But let's focus in there, Mr. Haller, on Arizona State, Herm Edwards, spring football. What are your general thoughts coming into this spring that you want to see, that you are most anticipating?
Size. As you know, Brad, since Herm Edwards has come aboard in his staff, they've been wanting to get bigger and they've been wanting to get with more length. And it's been a process. I'm not convinced that, you know, size automatically translates to success on the football field, but I know it doesn't hurt. Marvin Lewis once told me, and it's 100% true, that this is a game played by big men, large men. And they've upgraded the offensive line. They've upgraded the defensive line. Let's see how that translates. Let's see how many times they can knock down a pass at the line of scrimmage on that defensive front. Let's see how the offensive line, which looked good last year and returns four starters, let's see how they look. So that's what I'll be most interested to see out there at the practice field.
Okay, so let's get the obvious guy out of the way then we'll go further than that. That's Jaden Daniels. I had Herm on a couple of weeks ago. He said he was pushing 190 or at 190. Have you seen him? Have you spoken with him? What are you anticipating him to look like? We always go back to what does he look like? When he showed up, he looked like this pen. He looked like a thermometer. You know, you put tomato juice in him and turn him sideways. He's a thermometer. He looks like he's putting on some weight. So what are you seeing? What are you hearing? What do you want to see this week?
It was not the best day. The day Jaden Daniels showed up for his first spring practice a couple years ago, it was not the best day for Arizona State media, because I remember standing there with some others saying, there is no way someone that thin is going to walk in here and get the starting job. Their teams are going to break him in half. And yet Jaden Daniels has started every game but one since then. So he has proved us all wrong. I think maybe he has proven that the weight thing was overblown, that his talent was a little bit – that maybe his talent trumped that. But you saw last year, Brad, just his arms were more defined. He had more zip on his passes. I think he ran with more confidence. So I just want to see that next step. I don't have any real questions about how he looks, but I do, you know, last year was a strange year for Jaden, you know, with the COVID interruptions and everything. You know, this is his year. You know, this is his year to go from good young quarterback to top of the conference quarterback, you know, start to get national attention quarterback. So I really want to see how he kind of takes that and really takes a huge jump in his third year.
This is his final year at Arizona State, right?
I think if all goes well, there's a good chance of that. You know, I've told you before, Arizona State is a program where next year is always where everything lines up. You know, next year, you know, is the best recruiting class that's coming. This is the year they've been preparing for. It's always the next year. It's next year university. Yeah. Well, when you have 12 starters returning on defense, when you have all but two starters on offense returning, and you have, you know, a coach and a staff entering his fourth year for the most part, you know, it's time to be that contending team. So If everything goes in line and Jaden has a good year, as I expect him to, I would be surprised if he sticks around much longer than that.
Okay, players that you look at coming into this week, and I know you can go through the whole roster because that's what you do at The Athletic, but a player or two that fans may not be aware of, that you're like, guys, this is someone that next season, when they kick it off, you better know about him just as much as Jaden Daniels. Got a couple names?
Well, first of all, the first thing, when I go out there, I'm going to be looking at the receivers because they lost Frank Darby and they don't have – you know, that obvious go-to target. And it's the first time in a long time that they haven't had that obvious guy. We've had N'Keal Harry. We've had Brandon Ayuk. We've had Frank Darby. Who's the number one guy? I don't know who that is at this point. If I had to guess, I would say LV Bunkley Shelton, who was a freshman last year. Fans should know his name. Also, Johnny Wilson was a freshman last year and showed some promise. But I think LV Bunkley Shelton is the type of guy that develops that chemistry with Jaden Daniels. You know, offensive line, Tristan Miller, a transfer from North Carolina. You know, there's going to be an open spot at that center position. And, you know, Arizona State is in its best on paper, its best position on the offensive front in probably since maybe 2013, 2014, in my opinion. So they have some experience there. So if they can get maybe Tristan Miller, who they're going to look at that center position, I think that would be huge for them. And then also just guys along the defensive front who, you know, they made a huge step last year. Can they continue to develop, you know, just take that next step as far as becoming, you know, a defense that can rely on a four-man pass rush?
Doug Haller with us with The Athletic. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you check out his content inside and out around Arizona State. He does a terrific job in the Pac-12 in general. And to that end, where is ASU today if you're doing your Pac-12 South ranking?
I think they have a chance. I think I would put them number one. I mean, I just don't see – if they're not going to do it this year, I don't know when they're going to do it. Now, you look at every beat writer tends to look at their team within that bubble. Everything is lined up for Arizona State. They have the quarterback. Their offensive line should be good. The defense has everybody returning. The running backs look good. But SC had a great recruiting class, and SC returns a very good quarterback. Utah is always going to be a contender in the South, but I just feel like everything is finally aligned. I think I've picked Arizona State to finish first in the South twice before. Mm-hmm. Once the year they did win it in 2013, and once the year I believe it was 15 when Kirk Herbstreit picked them to make the playoff and excitement was through the roof, and then they lost to Texas A&M in the opener and went downhill from there. So I'm 1-1 in those predictions, but I really think that they should have what it takes to win the South this year.
Okay. And to that end too, their schedule non-conference is easy. I mean, the BYU game is going to be a challenge, but it's not like you sit there and say, wow, this is a murderer's row.
Not at all. Not at all. That they should have, I mean, outside of the BYU game, you know, I think they should have who loses their quarterback by the Heisman Trophy. I think he finished what, eighth in Heisman Trophy voting. They should be able to build some momentum, you know, where they're, you know, questionable. They should, like the receiver spots, they should be able to develop those top guys. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they should move into conference play on a good note, but you know, things change quickly and we'll see how it goes, but you know, things do seem like they head in the right direction before. Okay,
last question on this, Doug, and that is, make sure you guys check out Doug's content over at The Athletic. Last question is, Antonio Pierce has gotten a lot of play and a lot of run. And the view is that he is going to be the guy that eventually replaces Herm. At what point does Herm start going through spring football and he's more or less a spokesperson for the university and handles all the media stuff and does it well, and he just hands everything off to AP? Because that's really what it's becoming now for some of these guys, the Nick Sabans of the world, Dabo Sweeney. It's like they don't coach as much as they do media, as they sell programs. Is Herm already in that space? And do you anticipate AP having a more visible role as the head coach in waiting?
Well, you have to remember, Herm is not your average. He's 66 years old. I would subtract 6 years off that right off the top, because he's not your average 66-year-old football coach. He's got a youthful energy to him, a youthful enthusiasm, and I don't sense in the time I've been around him. And granted, you know, we weren't around him all last season because of COVID. So I don't sense that he's going to be that guy that's not going to be as involved. You know, we kind of thought when Herm was hired that he was going to be that CEO type coach. And then we're out there and we go out there and he's running drills with the DBs, you know, with his hat backwards. I still think he's going to be that guy. Now, I do think, you know, and Herm has been very open about this, that he is grooming Antonio Pierce to be a head coach. If Herm has his way, it'll be at Arizona State. So I do think last year he started to involve AP in more decisions, include him, explain why he was making certain decisions. And I do think Antonio Pierce has positioned himself to start being more involved, to start take a bigger role. And I think he's ready to take that next step. But I don't think we're close to a full transition there. And keep in mind, the coaching waiting thing doesn't have a great history around the country. It never seems to work out. It does. It has. But, you know, AP is going to get attention every offseason from bigger schools, bigger conferences, and maybe the NFL. And it's going to be something Arizona State's going to have to address every year.
I loved how you started out this segment by saying always next year university. I mean,
Is it not? It is
so true. I've been here since 93, and all I've ever heard is just wait till next year. Just wait till this group comes. Oh my gosh, this is the most amazing. And then I talked to the guys from the Rose Bowl team and Jake and the guys, and they're like, when are we ever going to get back there? And it's like, well, next year is supposed to be the year. So that's a great way to put it. I appreciate your time and your insight as always. Stay safe.
Thanks for having me, Brad.
There's Doug Haller with The Athletic. Make sure you subscribe to The Athletic. They do terrific work there. We're back with more after this timeout.